And we're very privileged again to have Professor Alan Cooper here, the Director of the Australian Centre for Ancient DNA. Alan Cooper, good morning.
Good morning, how are you doing?
So this is about 50 years ago. We understand DNA is the stuff of life, if you like. What lays down the blueprint for human beings and everything from a worm to a slime mould or whatever. We talked about that once before. And then, of course, this enables you at the Centre for Studying Ancient DNA to go back in time and look at where we came from. Now, call from Brian Morris this morning, President of Atheism SA. Now, this is a gentleman who was very concerned that we didn't have much of this in the museum. Now,
yeah, it was surprising, actually. It was a surprising point. Until that was pointed out, I had no idea.
That there was no story of the DNA story linked in with human evolution in the museum. Brian Morris has called in. Good morning, Brian.
Yes, good morning, Ian.
And are you happy about the fact that there's now a display in the museum? And we'll talk to Professor Cooper about what perhaps the DNA story could be part of that.
Indeed, it would be, Ian. I'm really impressed with Alan's work as well. But first of all, with the SA Museum, look, we're delighted. It's taken 5 years to get that human evolution display back at the SA Museum.
And have you've had a look at it, Brian?
Well, I have. I've got to say, look, it's not terribly substantial, Ian. It's really a glass case about a metre wide and 3 metres high. I mean, they've got
a narrow bookcase with the history of the world of humans.
They have 7 replica skulls going back to some of the early Australopithecines, working through Homo habilis, Homo erectus, Cro-Magnon man, and up to Homo sapien, which is
Neanderthal,
a great start.
Is Neanderthal there?
Yeah, they've got a Neanderthal replica skull there.
Mm-hmm. And have they got a Denisovan?
No, they won't, because we don't have a skull for that yet.
Oh, okay.
That's the all-new Neanderthal, of course, from Asia, and we don't actually have any complete skull. We've got a couple of teeth and a little finger bone, the tip of someone's little finger, from which the entire genome was sequenced.
Well, Brian, it sounds like Alan could perhaps get a replica of a finger or a tooth of a Denisovan, and it could be the next one that could be sitting there next to the Neanderthal.
Honestly, I think anything that can add to that exhibit would be a great move. I mean, look, I think it's amazing. I mean, there are tens of thousands of kids that go through that information centre every year, and there's been no evidence of our own evolution. It really needs to be expanded. And why it's important, really, is because it's wrong for people to say that everyone knows about human evolution. They don't.
Well, look, Brian, thanks for pointing that out. So if you go down to the museum now, and Brian, it sounds like your wish has come true, but the wish could be a bit bigger. Alan,
yeah.
If you do have a display in the museum like that, how much of that should tell the story of DNA as well? Because this is the thing that you specialise in, being able to trace back through thousands of generations where we came from.
Yeah, surprisingly little information about DNA in museums. It's still considered too new. People want to see fossils and casts and the like. I do think it's a really important angle that the kids in particular who are growing up in a molecular biology world need to be exposed to, because this stuff is all new. And it really emphasizes, for example, how much computation and maths have now become part of evolutionary studies rather than just fossils. It's how you analyze this enormous amount of DNA information. But what I would add is that a case with a bunch of skulls in it is a start. There's people interested in a science museum in Adelaide, certainly. Right. There's talk of that going on. And, I'd be quite keen to see something like that. I do think the DNA gets short shrift in modern society because most people weren't brought up with that as part of their education.
Now, Professor Alan Cooper from the Centre for Ancient DNA, I saw a documentary where they showed a cave in Gibraltar, which they said was the last place that the Neanderthal lived. The last Neanderthal family was in that cave,
mm-hmm.
28,000 years ago.
Yep.
So when did they do the arrangement where they, intermarried?
Handed over. Mm. Gorham's Cave, it's called, in Gibraltar. It's the last site in Europe that we can see signs of the tools and the style of life that would show Neanderthals were there. Certainly Neanderthal bones are earlier in the cave deposits, but the last signs of their presence seems to be about 28,000 years ago. Humans are in Europe, as I said, about 42,000 years, so 12,000 years earlier than that. 14, sorry. But interestingly, there's no sign of any DNA being traded, i.e. through hybridization, between...
You mean mating?
Mating, yeah. Basically, doing the naughty in these caves, in Europe. While we definitely know that most of us are carrying around Neanderthal DNA as a result of the hybridization, that seems to have happened much earlier. As humans came out of Africa, as they moved through the Near East, where Neanderthals were, that seems to be the point there was hybridization. The subsequent period of time when modern humans move into Europe, there doesn't seem to have been any gene flow for some reason.
So we were attracted to Neanderthals in the...
Or desperate enough. As we came out of Africa and we got into Europe and it was game over. And it may well be that, you know, in very small population sizes, when you don't have a lot of mate choice...
you're picking Neanderthal girl or Neanderthal boy.
Well, whichever way around. Yeah, it couldn't go either way. And there's now actually thought, studies on polar bears and brown bears showing that they've hybridized back in the past. So this might actually be an evolutionary strategy that during times of climate change, when things are really rough and your population's getting down and you're looking for new genetic strategies to adapt, what better way to get new genetic strategies than hybridize with a different species?
And were the Neanderthals a different species?
Well, that's a good question. Traditionally, they were thought of as such. Now, because we've interbred with them and that breaks the rules about what a species is, it's less clear that they may have just been a different group is now what we're calling them.
Now when you see these skulls, and Ryan Morris from Atheism SA has just reminded us that they are in the museum, you can see these skulls there, the story of man, now they're in this little bookcase in the museum. You'll actually see the Neanderthal skull. Mm-hmm. Brian's still on the line. I think, Brian, what's the Neanderthal skull look like compared to your own skull?
Probably Alan would be better to describe all of that, but it's certainly far more flat in terms of the face.
Big eyebrow ridges. Amazingly long roots on their teeth. The incisors, particularly along the front teeth, go right up into the nasal cavity. Huge. They're about 4 centimetres long, 4.5. And the reason for that, we think, is they're using them as tools. They use their mouth as a vice.
Like a panda.
They're grabbing stuff in their mouth, pulling, if you can imagine, a bit of meat out with your left hand, and then cutting it with the right. So it's actually using a stone tool. You're using your mouth as a vice for eating. And as a result, you have to strengthen the roots.
And Brian Morris, President of Atheism SA, have you done your genome yet and worked out whether you've got Neanderthal in you?
No, I haven't yet, Ian, but look, I think what Alan's been talking about, I'm certainly motivated now to do that and join the pack, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of Neanderthal there.
Now, and it's such a good thing because, I mean, really, it shows that, look, this idea of species doesn't really work as well as we would like. And we've known that for a while. You know, now we can see that species are hybridizing. And furthermore, it shows that Europeans and everybody outside Africa is this hybrid mongrel of both Neanderthals and Denisovans. And the irony, which I think is just so good, is it's the Africans, pure Africans, are the purest form of modern human, if you like. So all that racial theory of early science got everybody into so much hot water and so much trouble.
Well, the stuff we saw just recently where they were saying, they're referring to an Aboriginal man as saying, oh, why doesn't he go and try out for King Kong? All this sort of stuff.
I mean, absolutely ridiculous. And it just shows that, look, we're all African. We've all come out of Africa. We've got slightly different skin because of things like the sunlight. You know, if Hitler and his Aryan purists, if they really knew what was going on genetically, the Africans were the ones that were the pure humans. The whole thing is just, it's ridiculous that so much harm was done over.
And this is why science is good, because science can provide the answers. But the Neanderthal, getting back to that, the Neanderthal was close enough to be different enough, but you could still mate.
Exactly.
So the brown bear, polar bear thing.
Yeah, that's the conundrum. I mean, how different was it? And there's a whole bunch. Actually, if you're interested in this, there's a talk coming up by Chris Stringer, the guy who's actually done some of the Neanderthal work in Gibraltar, on the 11th of July at the Adelaide University. I've got a mate of mine that I've done a lot of work with. And we've got him giving a talk on the origin of human species. And he'll be talking about exactly that issue. I mean, how different was the Neanderthals? We think behaviorally and cognitively they were distinct. Question is how much?
And this brow ridge, you think you've got reasonable
I've got a
brow.
Bit.
You've got,
I,
a, you've
I
got a fairly decent I, brow yeah, ridge, haven't
exactly,
you?
Exactly. Very
so this
useful.
Is this
Very
is
useful.
And the Neanderthal had a reasonable hooter.
They had a quite a big pronounced nose and no chin. That was the interesting thing. They went backwards from the nose, which was an interesting
With these
technique.
Large canine teeth.
Yeah, you see a little bit of this in England still, actually, if you look around.
So sort of chinless people with large noses and high brows.
Often in politics.
Alan.
Or rugby, I think.
Alan. 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 Oh, goodness me. Now, if you've got some people in their teeth have pronounced canines.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that a sign of Neanderthal? Some people's teeth run all the way across and they don't have any of the canines sticking down. Yep. Other people look mildly vampire-ish, don't they?
Yeah. That's, I think, to do, at least according to my dentist, more to do with how you grind your teeth, particularly at night when you're sleeping. The movement and the way that your teeth butt up against each other, how much stress. Apparently at night, so I'm told, the stress you've got when you clench your jaws together is actually wearing your teeth, which is why they line up. And so how they're matching will either flatten off or allow your canines down.
Oh, okay, so it's more to do with teeth grinding. And look, one of the listeners would like to know how much a DNA test costs.
$100 to $200, depending on the firm. Have a look at the websites. They'll give you a rundown on what, because some of the firms are testing different things. So depending on what you want to ask.
Are they all pretty good, or is there?
Yeah, I think they're all reasonable. I mean, the competition between them keeps them reasonably honest, which is good.
And maybe you'll bring the price down at one stage, yeah.
Yeah, well, $100 to $200. And I mean, look, they're typing 300,000 or so genetic markers in some of these tests. I mean, it's enormous. No one would have thought a couple of years ago you could do that.
Mm. Well, Alan, I will be interested to see who's got the most Neanderthal in us. So yep. This is the challenge.
Yep.
Maybe we could sort of run a competition on this.
The Neanderthal off.
Actually, be a great reality TV show, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, To inspire people into science, you could bring them in. People could vote on telly, you know, which one they think's got more Neanderthal and they haven't. Then at the end of the show, you could reveal it.
Exactly.
And we're going to do that here.
You seen John Howard's eyebrows? Just a thought. just a thought.
Do you think there's...
Well, there you go.
Well, I mean, you're...
Celebrity. We could have a celebrity version of the
celebrity
show.
Version. We could do DNA on all sorts of people. Yeah. Anyway, it's been wonderful to have you along, Professor Alan Cooper, and a reminder that that talk on the origin of human species is on the 11th of July.
Friday night.
And public can get along?
Can. I think it's actually almost full, but we're going to live stream it.
So we'll live stream it. Yep. Oh, well, if you give us the details, we'll tell our listeners about that.
Check out the webpage Adelaide University. Yep.
At the Adelaide University website, check it out. Friday week, The Origin of Species. Thanks, Alan Cooper.
Thank you very much.